On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Matthew chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. Hey everybody, I'm Chris Dowd.
And I'm Reagan Gilliland.
And this is Off Script, the podcast where every week we take a deeper dive on last Sunday's sermon, talk about the theology behind it, and get a chance to talk about anything that ended up on the cutting room floor. We're excited to get started today. This is Advent 4. I preached this one. It was called Christmas Unwrapped, the Powerful, from Matthew 2, verses 1 to 12. If you don't know off the top of your head, that's the story of the Magi. And this is the week after we talked about Luke's account of Jesus' birth, specifically with regard to the shepherds, who were the outsiders. So this is a contrast to Advent 3.
Yeah. Okay. So you open up talking about John Henry Hopkins Jr., which you talk about how, let's see, he was a lawyer.
He was an ordained Episcopal priest.
And then a lawyer.
Also had a law degree.
And a journalist.
And he was a journalist. And he was musically inclined.
Right.
So the 19th century clergy are making me feel a little inadequate, to be honest with you.
I was like, I'm not good at anything.
That's not true. But I don't know if you have a law degree.
I sure don't.
Can you write Christmas carols?
No. I write Christmas carols like Kristen Wiig and Fred Arnson on Saturday Night Live. You know, they just make up songs
as
they go.
That's good.
That's my genre.
That could be a whole podcast.
Good. Okay. This has nothing to do with the sermon I talk about the sermon content. So he talked about, and the trees, they would put the presents and their treats. When would they put those in the tree?
Yeah. When the tree, so back in the old days. So, what Reagan's talking about is in the sermon, I talk about how the tradition, at least in this part of the world in the mid 1800s, was that the Christmas tree would be decorated, and that when the tree went up, which was typically very close to Christmas, the presents would be in the tree along with other treats, and they would stay in the tree until the tree was taken down on Epiphany. So I'm not entirely clear whether they opened Christmas gifts on Christmas, but the gifts in the tree didn't get opened until the tree came down on Epiphany.
So I'm concerned about treats being in the tree for a long time.
I think probably more like hard candy. But, you know, they didn't have great stuff.
Because I was like, I don't know if I want to eat a donut or a cookie.
No. Listen, there are lots of reasons not to want to live in the 1800s. The quality of the Christmas treats is probably one of them. I mean, you're talking about, fruitcake. Come on. Fruitcake could have hung in the tree forever and been just fine.
Yeah.
Because that's nasty.
It's nasty. You just put it in the box, bring it out next year. It tastes the same.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It weighs a little heavier. It's a little heavier because of the bacteria or whatever, but yeah.
There's no little Debbie Christmas trees in there.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk more about the sermon. So John Henry Hopkins Jr., he writes the song We Three Kings. So he takes a little bit of creative liberty.
And we should say.
Yeah.
If Ashley's going to keep all this in.
Yeah.
Ashley's the one who's in charge of making this look good. Ashley Danner. She's our producer. So he wrote the song because of this tradition of the presents being opened on Epiphany.
Okay.
And so he had nieces and nephews. He never had children of his own, but he had his nieces and nephews. He was celebrating the holiday with them. And he wanted them to understand the story of Epiphany. Mm-hmm. Because everybody, we all default to the baby Jesus.
Yeah.
But Epiphany is a kind of a different story. And to make the connection, the theological connection between gift giving, like that we exchange gifts, and its origins on, when the Magi appear to visit Jesus. Yeah.
Okay. So you are someone that really, really loves Christmas and these texts especially. So does it bother you when people take creative liberty?
Okay. So the creative liberties, what creative liberties are you referring to?
Oh, saying we three kings when there's not, we don't necessarily have those three. We don't know if there's kings.
Right.
When does it start to be heresy? I'm just curious, because I'm someone who preaches that does take a lot of creative liberty.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah. So heresy. Okay. So by the time Hopkins writes We Three Kings, it had already been deep, deep, deep in the tradition that there were three magi and that they were kings.
Okay.
I mean, as early as the third century, Christians were kind of assuming they were kings, and they made some connections to Psalms. There's a psalm that refers to the kings visiting someone who is thought to be the Messiah. I mean, there are theological reasons for that, even though Matthew specifically does not say it.
Okay.
And then we've, in the popular imagination, there are three because there are three gifts. That's not exact. We all know, parents know, gift giving is not a one for one thing, right? No. Our children do not get two gifts on Christmas because they have two parents. Right? There would probably be a mutiny in the house if there was a one for one there, gift giver to gift. But regardless, Frederick Buechner, I talk about Buechner a lot, mm-hmm. and he, in his Listening to Your Life, which I refer to all the time, he's got a devotional for Easter where he talks about there are details of the Easter story that if I don't believe in them exactly as they appear, mm-hmm. then I probably need to turn in my orders.
Okay.
You know, he actually rose from the dead, and there was actually an empty tomb, and that's really the foundation of our faith. He said it's a little different with Christmas, because with Christmas you've got these what he refers to as legendary accretions, like these things that build up over the years that add charm to the story, because nothing really can embellish the magnificence of the incarnation too much.
Okay.
So to me, a heresy is something that is counter to what we believe.
Okay.
Like that runs opposite against what we believe. So it's fine. If people want to call the three kings Caspar, Balthazar, and Melchior.
Yeah, how did they get those names?
8th century. Okay. I looked something up on this.
Okay.
In anticipation of your question that you sent me yesterday.
Okay.
So we can come back to that.
Okay.
But if to believe that that those are the characters, to believe that they're kings, to believe that there were really three of them, does not change the point of the story in any way. So I how I feel about Christmas. There's not too much we can do to over celebrate the holiday.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So you talked about how priests studied stars back in, again, priests and people did a lot of other things.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was specifically talking about the Eastern priests.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, as opposed to like Jewish priests.
Okay.
Because there are scholars who would say that not only were these priests from the East, but they were Zoroastrian priests. I mean, there were some connections there.
Okay.
Matthew doesn't tell us, so we don't know for sure, but, you know, that's a possibility. And they were, to say they were astrologers as much as they were priests.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why do you think that didn't carry on to other, like to the Jewish priest or other, you know, that's really not in our background. I'm just curious.
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't know, because when I think of like astrology, then I think of like horoscopes and stuff that like we shouldn't dabble in. And so like,
right.
It's weird to think about, I don't know. I mean, the stars are obviously important.
Scripture does say, like in the Psalms, there are allusions to all creation proclaiming the glory of God, you know?
Yeah.
But we don't like, you're right, like anything that, especially in the Old Testament, anything that seemed like witchcraft or whatever,
right?
We're very out on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was...
Historically speaking.
Yeah.
That's not a shot at Harry Potter.
No.
Because actually, I've got a Harry Potter reference at some point.
Okay.
Yeah. In the next couple of weeks, we've been knee-deep in Harry Potter in our house, and so...
We too.
It's top of mind.
Okay. Yeah, we just finished the second book with Andy, so...
It's probably a good place to stop for the 4-year-old. She's 4?
She'll be 5.
She'll be 5.
I know.
So until she'll be 15, I don't know that I'd keep going too far.
I know. I'm like, how do I convince her not to want to read the next one, even though it's sitting under the Christmas tree?
Well, so Sam is 10, you know, and we just finished the books with him. And even at 10, there's some stuff that's pretty heavy.
So we'll see. Okay, so here is the question. How did they come up with the three names for the kings?
Yes, so...
And one's Caspar, the friendly ghost. Is that what I heard you say?
Caspar.
Close enough.
So I actually went to... I'm a Gen X, So I looked this up on Britannica.
Ooh.
Do you know what that is?
I do know what that is.
Because your parents had it.
We
the
had
encyclopedias.
Them. We did. Actually, I think
that's
we had
excellent.
The we had. I think we had World Book.
Yeah.
But yeah.
World Book. Okay. See, that just does my heart good because it, like my World Book was my go-to, my starting place. Mm-hmm. Every paper I ever wrote in elementary school and probably high school. So, anyway, according to Britannica, which is a reputable source, and I've seen this corroborated in my commentaries, like Raymond Brown, The Birth of the Messiah is classic on this. But it says about the 8th century, the names of the Magi appear in a chronicle known as the Excerpta Latina Barbari. That's Latin.
Okay.
They become known most commonly as Balthazar, Melchior, and Gaspar, according to Western church tradition. So if you were to like go like in the Catholic Church, for instance, the nativity set that I grew up with, mm-hmm. the one in our under our tree, had them depicted this way. So Balthazar is often represented as the king of Arabia.
Okay.
Or sometimes Ethiopia. Melchior as king of Persia, and Gaspar as a king of India. So oftentimes Balthazar is depicted as African.
Okay. Yeah. So your set had that. Okay.
Yeah,
that's
cool. And in the sermon, I showed like a Christmas card that has them named,
mm-hmm.
and they're reflective of their supposed country of origin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But like that's an example of later what Buechner would call legendary accretion that does not change the point of the story,
mm-hmm.
but kind of enhances the charm of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm on board.
Yeah. I like that. Okay. I didn't put this in the questions I sent you, but what do the three gifts symbolize?
This is actually where Hopkins does a good job in We Three Kings.
Okay.
So gold is treasure for a king. Let's see, myrrh is the one where you prepare a body for death, so it looks forward to his mm-hmm. death. And then frankincense.
I can't remember.
I think it's just sweet smelling. Okay. Incense, like, yeah, brighten up your Christmas.
You know, they didn't have Bath and Body Works back then, so.
Right, well, right, exactly. I mean, so, one of the cool gifts that I got somewhere along the way, you know, how church members will go mm-hmm. to the Holy Land or.
Yeah.
And so we had members at Arapaho. Jim and Barbara Adams, who went on a really amazing trip to that part of the world, Egypt in particular, and they brought back little vials mm-hmm. that had frankincense and myrrh.
Oh.
They did not bring me gold, but they did bring frankincense and myrrh because they know, you know, everyone knows how I feel about Christmas, and I've got these little jars in my office.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you talk about how these wise men or king, you know, however we want to really name them, had to have some sort of power to get time with Herod.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So talk about what that looked like or why that's probably an important fact to realize.
So the way Matthew puts it, in the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea,
Yeah.
So we should just point this out. Later in the story of the Massacre of the Innocents, Herod kills everybody 2 years or younger.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this could be like 2 years after he was born. This is not the night of his birth.
Yeah.
But that's okay. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking. Like they just showed, all we know is they showed up and they got to talk to Herod. And so they had to have had some kind of a status. Like you or I couldn't just show up in Herod's court and say, hey.
Yeah.
We saw the stars. And, right? I mean,
right.
So they were... The implication is that they were in some kind of an entourage. We don't know how many there are. It just says wise men, plural. They're the ones on camels in the nativity mm-hmm. set because they probably came from Persia, somewhere there. You know, that's east of where we were talking about. And so what I love about the story is where, especially the contrast with Luke. So Luke, we talked about this last week, is all about the outside. So when the angel shows up, it's to these yahoos in the field who can't mm-hmm. get a job doing anything else. Matthew starts his story after this appearance to Joseph. I mean, there's first chapter, a promise, an announcement, but the actual connection to his birth, it starts in the very seat of power. It's quite a contrast.
Yeah.
So you had these men, or these strangers arrive who clearly had resources to travel all the way to the Holy Land just following a star, right?
I mean,
you had to have, someone had to be funding you to be able to do that. And then you had Herod and all of his court who receive them, and their reaction to the news is opposite. Mm-hmm. So those in power, ironically, sadly, not all the Gospels are clear about this, the ones who should have received him with open arms and been excited that he showed up, in theory, not just reject him, but want to eliminate him.
Yeah.
And the strangers from the East who don't really know anything about the traditions, who don't know the whole concept of a Messiah, just know that this sign, and this, like, the sign from heaven is that something big happened over here in Bethlehem, Jerusalem, Palestine, Israel, show up and respond to him with humility and reverence. And so, you know, it's, to me, it's, this is why, to me, it's this is a story for the powerful. And I think all of us, my clear implication is that all of us have some kind of power.
Yeah.
And in the sermon, I talk about, if nothing else, if we don't have any, if we don't have wealth, if we don't have political power, if we don't have status in our community or whatever, we still have the power to choose how we respond,
yeah,
which is plenty of power, you know, power enough. And so it's a story about how to choose wisely. And Matthew even calls them the wise ones. Mm-hmm. And Herod is clearly not the wise one.
Yeah. That's why there's only one, because you can't get a lot of wise men. Right? Pastor joke.
That's pastor joke.
Pastor joke.
So is that a dig at men?
Yep.
Is that a shot?
Yeah, it is.
Is that a, so it's a female pastor? A girl pastor? Woman pastor?
Yeah.
What's the appropriate term?
I don't know.
I feel like
lady pastor is usually what Scott says. He's like, "Hey, lady pastor."
Lady pastor, that is awful.
My husband respects me. It's our joke. It's our joke. Okay, so you kind of touched on this, but I think what's so fascinating is, okay, so the high priests were also scared of this news, because you think, like, shouldn't they be like, "Oh my gosh"?
Yeah, they should.
And yet,
yeah.
And the fact that they told Herod the truth. They're like, yeah, in Bethlehem. Like, don't you think, like, no, this is going to be our savior, our rescuer, and yeah, we know exactly where to find him. Go kill. Like, that part just makes my head hurt. Like, what's going on there?
So this is really important. This is a really important point. The people in Herod's court were doing just fine. The people in Herod's court didn't need a savior.
Okay.
It was the Yehus in the field, mm-hmm, that needed the Romans gone. And needed a restoration of the kingdom. Herod was just a vassal client king of Rome. He had plenty of power in his own realm. And the priests on the payroll, and this is the way the Gospels portray them, overwhelmingly negatively, benefited from this arrangement. Mm-hmm. Now, all the people were impoverished and suffering.
Yeah.
This is why I think that movie we talked about a couple weeks ago, there's this movie, The Nativity, does a really nice job of showing what it was like to live under the thumb or the boot of Rome as a peasant.
Yeah.
I mean, Herod had these amazing building projects. He was renowned for what he was able to accomplish in terms of, like, his own personal power. But he was ruthless.
Yeah.
And he was not interested in anybody coming and shaking things up. Hmm. And I think that's for Matthew, that's not a minor point.
Yeah.
That sometimes our comfort, our security can keep us from being open to the radical nature of the gospel.
Yeah. Yeah, people are real scared to lose things, because mm-hmm, if I'm way too comfortable now. If I submit myself, and in the context of, if I send myself to God, what am I going to have to give up? And I'm not willing to let that go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad that these, like, yeah, it's really sad.
Sad is a really good word. And also, you know, if you read the Bible start to finish, probably predictable. Right? I mean,
yeah.
People with the most to lose are sometimes, and in Scripture oftentimes, the least receptive to the high standards and change that God calls us to.
Yeah.
And so, certainly Herod and his court were victim to that.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant part of Brothers Karamazov, which is my favorite novel of all time, Dostoevsky, called The Grand Inquisitor. Have you ever read The Grand Inquisitor?
I have not.
So the brother in brother, so Brothers Karamazov is something I would highly recommend. Everyone should read it at least once in their lifetime. Each of the brothers represents an aspect of human nature. And one of the brothers is studying to be a priest. So he's the pious one. And he's got a brother who's kind of a hedonist and kind of an agnostic.
Okay.
And they love each other, but they confront each other throughout the novel. And in the story of the Grand Inquisitor, it's a story that Ivan, the brother who's not the religious one, tells to his brother who is the religious one about how during the Spanish Inquisition, Jesus came back. And the Grand Inquisitor knew it was Jesus. And they still killed him because he said the people can't deal with freedom. Huh. They can't handle the freedom you would offer them. We'll take care of the people. Huh. We'll worry about their temporal needs and their spiritual ability to get to heaven. But you would just be disruptive right now. Dostoevsky was a deeply faithful Russian Orthodox author. And that's kind of King Herod.
Yeah.
So we spent all of August talking about human nature. Mm-hmm. And there's just a part of us that is reluctant to say yes to God, which is why, by the way, your sermon on Mary's yes and the Annunciation mm-hmm. is so powerful. Now, that's a different gospel, but when you take it as part of the collective story of his birth, Mary's yes and Herod's no are very, very, that's just kind of a morality tale writ large, yeah. Right? Here are your choices.
Yeah.
May it be with me according to your word, or come back and tell me where he is so I can go get him.
Yeah. So with that, so did Mary and Joseph and Jesus, were they in Bethlehem then until they escaped to Egypt?
That's so...
What's implied?
Yeah, that's what's implied.
For a couple years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because the census is only in Luke.
Yeah.
So this idea of the temporary, they're temporarily.
Yeah.
Because they're from Nazareth. Everybody knows he grows up in Nazareth.
Yeah.
So in Matthew's gospel, they're from Bethlehem, because both Matthew and Luke are clear that he was born in Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. And they get to Nazareth, like that's part of their escape to Egypt and then back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Mary and Joseph got out ahead before Herod's soldiers came, because Bethlehem's not that big. I feel like they could have.
Right.
I just think about, okay, so if the kings came a couple years after, mm-hmm. and then that's when Herod sends out and Joseph gets
Well, yeah, before. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's right. So the very next verse, the angel shows up again mm-hmm. to Joseph in a dream, says, get up and go. So the sequence of events in Matthew is the Magi say, okay, we'll tell you where he is. They go to Bethlehem. God's like, no, don't go back to Herod. And then God, basically at the same time, says, Joseph, you got to go.
Yeah.
And then Herod's waiting, sitting around, not very long thereafter, realizes he's been tricked.
Yeah.
And goes and orders the massacre of the innocents.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think about that. I'm like, well, Bethlehem's not that big, so they must have got a head start because...
they motored.
Yeah. Okay. So you touched on this a little bit already, but... I love how you talk about at the end of your sermon, towards the end, you talk about how careful we need to be when we're swayed by powerful people. Hmm. So how do you distinguish who is someone worth listening to or following? Because people are kind of rising up, maybe not so much in America, but I just think about people that maybe live in different countries where there's different powers that are, you know, how do we distinguish that? That may be a dumb question, but...
That's not a dumb question. Are you kidding? Like, we live in this disinformation age.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
We live in an age where conspiracy theories are rampant and whole, like whole sections of our society are being their minds are being poisoned by these ridiculous ideas.
Yeah.
Like just outright lies being perpetuated on the internet. Now, I don't want this to turn into a get off my lawn, the internet's bad kind of thing. but it's like you got to, that's Indiana Jones, number three, choose wisely. Like you've got to be really clear about who you're willing to listen to and who you're not. Mm-hmm. Who is the source of your guidance and information and who's not? It's tricky. I mean, I'm clear who my sources are. You know, in terms of like theological truth, it's the tradition of the church. It's what the Wesleyan tradition. It's, you know, there's plenty of room for disagreement on interpretation and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what is ultimately true and not, I mean, clearly I'm a homer for the church, right? I mean, I'm mm-hmm. bought in on that. But then in society, gosh, I don't know. We live in a weird time. Yeah. And there's this whole like deep fake thing, like where you can manipulate video to make it look like somebody said and did things mm-hmm. they didn't say and do. It's crazy. So I just think the bottom line is to choose wisely and to check out if something sounds weird, like check that out with other sources, mm-hmm. like other sources that are not in the same.
Yeah.
Like coming from the same company or website or whatever.
Yeah.
It seems self-evident to me that while we might have really important and passionate disagreements about how to respond to things that are happening, the fact that we can't agree on basics of things that are happening is tricky.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the story, back to the sermon, and the difference between Herod and the Magi, at least they both agreed that the same thing happened.
That's true.
They didn't agree on how to respond to it, but they both recognized that God had done this thing in the world. In the specific context of how to respond to God, then I think it's about being sure that you're listening to that you've got the sources that you trust that are part of the tradition that you believe in, and that you're listening deeply for what the right voices are saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you handle that?
You know, I think people just in general are really lazy when it comes to like wanting to get the right information. They just the clickbait stuff or whatever. I mean, for me, it's like you have to take the time to research and ask questions, and people assume too much. they don't ask questions, and also, I mean, spiritually stuff, like what is the Holy Spirit telling you? Mm-hmm. If there's a little like, I don't know, lean into that. Mm. Sit with it for a little while
and check it out with other people.
Yeah,
right.
I just think it goes back to like that immediate gratification. I just got to do an hour. Mm. I don't know. Mm.
That's a big question though. That's a good question. I just got totally distracted by your sweater. That's Santa on a unicorn.
It is.
Okay,
I'm sorry listeners, you can't see it. I know you're giving me weird, like I'm like, what is he looking at? Oh, it's my amazing sweater from the little boy section at Target. I got
the little boy section.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then you should also tell people about the pin on your sweater.
Yeah, it's a little Santa with a photo, and it's my husband when he was like 4 or 5, and he's got his cute glasses. It's the best.
He gave that to you?
His mom did. Okay. She's like, do you want this? I was like, yes, I do. Anyway. We got off track.
I think we're wrapped.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we're a couple of days to Christmas. I feel like we've explored the nativity scene,
mm-hmm.
kind of unpacked a whole lot of theology about what's contained in it. And this will come out on Tuesday, which means it's 2 days till the best day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
My sons both would argue it's actually 3 days from the best day of the year. Because okay. Christmas, they vote for Christmas Day as opposed to Christmas Eve.
Yeah,
I vote for Christmas Eve, but you know, I hope that everyone listening has an amazing Christmas. We're going to do a podcast on the Christmas Eve sermon, mm-hmm. where we actually talk one more time about the Nativity, which I'm excited about. Is that any other questions you had?
No, that's it. Merry Christmas. Hope you all get what you want, I guess.
Remember, one person, one gift. Do it the Magi way.
There you go.
If your kids give you a hard time, just tell them it's biblical.
Yep, they love that.
They love that. No, don't tell them that, because we want them to love the Bible.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, y'all. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us. God bless you. We'll see you next time for Off Script.